Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Census numbers show that nearly half of all jobs in the United States are filled by women, but that women make up less than a quarter of the workforce in so-called STEM, that is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Dublin IT entrepreneur Purba Majumdar has founded the award-winning Cool Tech Girls to turn that statistic around. She joins us now in the studio. Welcome to the show, Purba.
Thanks so much for having me, Anne.
You are from a highly educated family in India, but perhaps more importantly, you grew up in a culture that doesn't seem to distinguish between men and women when it comes to technology. Why do you think there's such a difference between the U.S. and India?
Like, you know, I've said several times before also, it's like it's the culture over there is just so much focused. You know, parents do everything they can to train and just get their kids ready for the future. As you know, there's over a billion people in the country. So the competition is really high over there. Everybody's trying to make their kids successful. And science, technology are the areas where there are more jobs traditionally has been. So they think that if they educate their kids, both men, girls and boys, you know, they're going to have a job for sure. They're not going to be unemployed.
So in India, though, that's kind of the same thing here. I mean, we know that that's where the emerging jobs markets are, but girls tend to think it's not. There's a stigma associated with it, a la cool tech girls. I mean, the idea is to say that this is a cool thing to do. So in India, girls think it's cool to go into technology.
Yeah, partly because that's what the family is talking about. That's what they see. Everything around them, everybody around them is saying the same thing, giving them the same message. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of, you know, ingrained in their head.
Mm-hmm. Fit at an early age. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about girls and technology. My guest is Purba Majumdar. She's the founder of Cool Tech Girls. It's a nonprofit organization established to help girls learn more about the STEM businesses. That's science, technology, engineering, and math. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You were inspired to create Cool Tech Girls because of your own daughter. She attends what's considered a good school, so this isn't a rich versus poor district issue.
No. Like I said, you know, it's more like the cultural thing, I think. Some of it has to do with parents not knowing enough about the job opportunities that are out there. And some of it is just like, you know, I'm a girl and I want to have, you know, friends. And this is not something most girls are doing. So I'm not going to have enough friends. That was what my daughter was thinking.
So if I go into the STEM curriculum in high school, I'm going to be one of maybe one or two of two girls out of 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in many classes, that is exactly the case. And there are only a few girls in the program. And that discourages them because, you know, they want to have friends and they don't find enough girls there. I mean, it's not that they don't want to pursue it, but the social aspect of it is, I think, kind of discourages them.
And they figure once they get into the job market, it's not going to be much different. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what has your experience been?
Well, you know, throughout my life, especially earlier on, I was many times the only woman in the team. I have always been in the software field, but it didn't bother me at all. Like, you know, I made friends with the guys in my team. They were my best friends. So it didn't bother me at all. But some girls, you know, it's really hard for them. And there are girls who are that way. They think that this is the right thing to do and their parents encourage them and they're doing it. Or they're very passionate about it. But then there are girls who really don't know what to do, and then they kind of go with the crowd.
They could make it in the STEM field, but they go more with the easy flow.
Right.
Path of least resistance. Tell us about how Cool Tech Girls inspires girls into science and technology.
So for Cool 10 Girls, when I founded it, I had a couple different things in mind. One was I really provided a very encouraging environment for girls to come in, because I felt like, especially in middle school, a lot of the girls, they're very discouraged. They don't think that this is the right place for them. They don't have enough friends, so they're very discouraged. They might be very smart, but they just don't want to do it because there's not enough girls. So I thought that if I created an environment exclusively for girls, then it would be very easy to attract them. And so that was the first thing that I wanted
to do. It's all girls.
It's all girls. And the second thing that I wanted to do is really give them exposure to different kinds of technologies and different kinds of job opportunities.
Because girls tend to people tend to think of only certain sort of categories.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, like, what are some of the alternatives that you brought in to for them to experience?
You know, science and technology is really a very broad term. Like, you know, when people think of computer programmers, they're really thinking like a Java programmer sitting and coding. But that's actually not at all the case. You know, I have been in this field for so long. I have my own technology services business. And we hire people a lot. So I see the job market. I see there are so many people who are unemployed, highly qualified, not enough jobs in those fields. But then I think that if they had pursued something along the lines of science and technology, they might have had a job now. And that was the thought process behind creating this, because I thought that if I tell them these are all the different things, not every one of them is going to be sitting in front of the computer and just coding. There is graphics, there is animation, there is social media. I mean, there's just like technology is so broad that there are so many things that they could do that they just don't know about. You know, we're partnering with universities, we're partnering with industries. Cardinal is a very big supporter of our program.
Give us an example of what you do with Cardinal.
So Cardinal actually has taken a very active interest into Cool Tech Girls program. Many of our volunteers are actually employees, really, like really senior level employees of Cardinal. One of their CIOs, Patty Morrison, has been a speaker to our girls, and it was very, very motivating speech that
she
gave.
She's head of communications, right?
No, she is in the CIOs.
Okay.
Yeah.
CIO. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you also work with the Dublin Entrepreneurial Center. Tell us about that relationship.
So when I first started, City of Dublin and Dublin Entrepreneurial Center, they really partnered with me. They gave me the support. It helped me build credibility. They really did the promotion for all the events. They donated their training space. So all of that they did to support our program, because, you know, it's just me and my company. And so I really needed to partner with some of the bigger organizations in the community to launch something that was going to be offering so many different things in the community. It's really a community-based effort, I would say. You know, even though I founded it and I had the vision for it, but it is all the volunteers who do it. It is 100% volunteer-run organization.
Is this pretty much a classroom thing?
Yes, it is kind of like a session that you go to, and we talk about different topics. There are some interactive parts to it. That's mostly it. But we also do like field trips. We had a field trip at Cardinal this year, and it was wonderful. They gave demonstration of their innovative programs. They had women role models. The girls were able to talk to them. It was such a fun event, and I think the girls loved it, totally loved it.
How does someone enroll in Cool Tech Girls? How do they get involved? Is it kind of like a club or what?
It is kind of like a club, I would say. So all they have to do is just go to the website www.cooltechgirls.org, and then there is a sign up button. They can sign up there. If not, they can also email us at info@cooltechgirls.org. And once they send us the email that they want to be listed in our emailing system, we would go ahead and add them, and they would be notified through emails.
And anyone from any school district can participate?
Yes, Central Ohio.
But not everybody has access to transportation and other resources that make them feel like they might fit in.
Yeah, but, you know, we try to do it in different locations. So, you know, we've had different companies like Improving Enterprises. They hosted one of our sessions. So we're talking to other companies and Girl Scouts. We partner with Girl Scouts. We have hosted with Girl Scouts, and they are, like, all over the place. So that's another way, you know, for them to be part of our program, too.
Does it cost money?
Girl Scouts, it's...
Well, no, I mean... Cool Tech Girls.
No, no. Most of our programs are free. We do offer like summer programs where we charge because it's a camp kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And if we partner with Girl Scouts, then we would charge, you know, as part of, because it's a whole day program. But the informational sessions that we have that are 2-hour sessions are free.
You're a tech business owner. Your company, Cybervation, recently won the Corporate Caring Award for Columbus Business First. It's worked. And its work with Cool Tech Girls. How has it grown and changed since you first came up with the idea and made your first presentation on it in 2012?
Oh, it's been so fantastic experience for me. I did not ever think that I was going to have more than, you know, 488 girls attended our session since we started in 2013. I never thought that would be the case. And every day we are getting parents who are enrolling our system and they want to attend our events. All our events are full. Every single one of them. And we even have girls on wait list, which is great, which is what we want. Yeah, I think that, you know, it was a new concept when I first started it. But ever since I started it, I think parents and girls have taken part in it. And they have discovered that this is something that is really going to be helpful for them. And ever since that time, I think we're seeing more interest. And girls come back. It's not just new girls. They come back. There are, you know, different types of girls. There are different age groups we do. We do from 4th to 12th grade. And we try to do events for all kinds of girls. It's not just, you know, for the high school girls or the middle school girls or the 4th and 5th graders. We try to do a whole range of programs.
When you first talked about this, you said that, you know, growing up in India, one of the big issues is that parents and families are so supportive and really, you know, I don't like to use the word push, but encourage their girls to get involved in the tech fields because that's where the jobs are and it's so competitive there. How much of this is for parents too here? How much of the education process needs to happen with them?
That's a wonderful question. I think that's a very important component. And because of that, when we do our Cool Tech Girls sessions, many of the sessions, we actually invite parents. They can sit in the during the sessions. They can ask questions. For Patty Morrison's session, we invited parents because we feel like this is something that they need to listen. They also need to know that there are opportunities out there. There are other women who are successful. There is a support system. And everybody is there to help their daughters. That's what I wanted to bring out. And I think that, you know, it takes time. But through our programs, we've been able to engage a lot of parents, and we're hoping to engage more.
Any success stories?
I think that there was a girl who was quoted in Dublin Life. I know that when they featured our magazine, they said that Annie's daughter, and she was... I think when she first got involved, she was not so much into technology and didn't know enough about it. But she attended a couple of our events. And then Annie said that she was very, very encouraged by what she saw. And then she started taking courses on her own. And she's brilliant. She's attended so many sessions and, you know, she's been a good part of it. The other thing that I want to mention, we have girl volunteers. And the girl volunteers are managing our marketing and the program aspects as well as adult volunteers. And that is wonderful because they get the, you know, communication skill, the leadership skills, the organizational skills. So they actually organize all these events along with adults. And that's a great experience for them. So they feel part of the organization. They're bringing me ideas. And that's, I think, is a big success for Cool Tech Girls. I really enjoy, you know, working with them. And I thank all the adult volunteers, like, you know, from different companies that have come forward and constantly guiding them. We have a program planning team meeting once a month, and they, you know, lay out kind of the plan, and they work with the girl volunteers. And we have like lead volunteers and then some other volunteers in the girls who are in high school. They do this, and it's been very successful.
Well, Purba Majumdar, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about it.
Thank you so much. It's a wonderful opportunity. So excited to be here. And again, thanks so much for everything.
We'll have a link to Cool Tech Girls on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. That's Purba Majumdar. She's the founder of Cool Tech Girls and also the founder and president of her own company, Cybervation, which recently won a Corporate Caring Award for Columbus Business First for its work with Cool Tech Girls. We'll have more Tech Tuesday coming up. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Kids are heading back to the classroom, and these days standard school equipment might include a laptop, a tablet, and an app or two. It's not how you experienced school, so we invited someone to help your child navigate the terrain. Joining us now is the editor of the Children's Technology Review, Warren Buchleitner. Welcome back, Warren.
Be with you.
Your first recommendation is to check with the school. What kind of questions should parents be asking, say, at the elementary level?
Well, you know, the first thing is that a lot of people think, you know, let's go buy a computer, let's go buy, you know, sign my child up for stuff, download apps, get an iPad or whatever. But what you don't want to happen is your child walks in with a brand new laptop and the teacher says, put it in the locker and put it away because we've got technology for you. So whether it's elementary or college, the first step is try to sync what you're doing in terms of technology with what the school's already doing.
At what age do kids really need or at least benefit from having their own laptop?
Well, I think that a laptop is kind of like the horse. You know, it's your digital center of activity and homework and files and all of that. And, you know, that, of course, is very subjective, and it's a parental decision. For my own kids, it was about fourth or fifth grade. They were able, you know, they were ready for it. They were ready to go online. They were ready to have their own email address. It's about the time you might think about getting them a mobile phone.
And this is also about the time that parents need to be educating themselves about the email, and I mean, to make sure. I mean, we can make assumptions that most people know about them, but not everybody does, or they're not sure necessarily what to do when it comes to monitoring a child.
Right. You know, so if you give them their own email address, if they are a lot of kids have an email address, say a Gmail is really easy to set up. They'll use it for school. They'll also need access to some sort of a cloud for storage. And again, if you check with the school first, you can kind of make sure that you're working with them rather than against them.
So let's talk about the options for computers out there. What should parents be looking for?
Oh, boy, there's good news. Lots of great options this fall. The best and the thing I'm most excited about are the Chromebooks, because the Chromebooks, we went out and we bought some ASUS Chromebooks for our library, and the kids have been beating them up. We plug a regular mouse into them. You can plug headphones in. And they're very Google-centric. It's kind of like a device built around a browser. So for Google Docs, you know, if your school is using Google tools, it's a great option. And, you know, for $160, well, actually $170 for this ASUS, you've got all day batteries, a real clear screen. And it's a very, very viable option. And I've seen it really liberate some kids who just couldn't afford a good laptop.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Warren Buchleitner. He's editor of Children's Tech Review. We've had him on many times before to talk about apps, and we'll get to some of those apps in just a minute. But we're talking about technology for kids on their way back to school. Maybe there was a day when we'd only be talking about it for college kids, but we're talking about it for all age kids now. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Do not wait until the end of the segment. So another gadget you think kids, students might find handy is a printer. We got one for our son last year who's going to be a sophomore in college now. But why is that? Why aren't printers just everywhere these days?
Oh, you mean paper?
Yeah.
Well, again, if your kid's in college, be sure to check with the college. We sent our daughter with a nice laser printer, and it spent the whole year under the bed. There are some all-purpose printers, and when I'm saying printer, I mean a fax and also copier.
Right.
Just to have one in your home. We use a Brother all-purpose printer that, you know, printer, fax, and copier that just has become so useful. And it's plugged into our Wi-Fi network at home, and it just works. And it's really useful for backup, you know, for when that you need to print something out, whether it's a soccer schedule or something to put on the refrigerator. You still do need it. And also make sure your toner's ready and, you know, ready for the year.
With more and more battery-powered devices in a household, do you think the idea of a USB charging station is a good one? Talk about that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we get all these devices, and then we forget they need electricity. And then what always will happen is you're getting a feud with your middle or high schooler about where's that charging cable.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go onto Amazon or go into Five Below, there's a whole bunch of cables and stuff you can get for $5 each now, even fire wires and so on. Just get some extras. Have them on hand. External power is handy to have. So we have a 6-port U.S. bus charger that's just sitting on our in the central part of our house, so anyone can charge anything.
So you recommend one from the company Fotiv?
Yeah, that's one that's worked well. There's a bunch. If you go in, you know, this is where just go into any online retail store and look at the reviews, and that's a good strategy. But one of the things that I found is that a tablet like an iPad needs more charge than a smaller device. And so you can get a smart US bus charger that senses what kind of wattage that the device needs. And so the one that I used is this, I forgot the brand, Fotiv or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's one of many. But look for something that's smart so that you... What'll always happen is you plug in your tablet and it says it's not charging because it's not the right port. And there's a bunch of them out there like that. So read the details carefully.
Now let's turn to some of your app recommendations. Again, listeners, if you have a question or comment for Warren Buchleitner, call us now, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And by the way, if you have some suggestions of your own, give us a call. For young children, you like the app Cat in the Hat, Read and Learn, based on the Dr. Seuss classic. How's it been updated for an interactive experience?
Well, it's from Ocean House Media, and Ocean House Media is the leader in the electronic reading experience. And they're, of course, their flagship products are all the Dr. Seuss apps. So certainly you've probably heard of them. They've just come out with a new line called Read and Learn. It's the first major re-engineering of the platform, and it has all sorts of ambient features that are sort of spooky. They're so lifelike, like when you tilt the screen, the trees move, and that effect on a young child is quite powerful. They start to realize they have more control than ever. And, of course, it has all the old-fashioned scaffolding, so you can touch an object or touch a word and see it connected with the picture. And so I'm very excited about this new revamp. And there's one out there called Cat in the Hat, and Green Eggs and Ham is coming actually Thursday this week.
And how do they typically – what's the concept of the game?
It's actually more of a story. They didn't mess around with Theodore Geisel's original intent, and that's a good thing. You know, you just can't. You should never. A good app never gets in the way of the narrative, and so you know you can just enjoy the story, reading it the old-fashioned way. But it's got all these built-in scaffolds, and then on every page there's scavenger hunt activities, and there are actually some more reading and phonics-based kinds of activities that build the skills. But those are all add-ons. So you can, you know, if you want to use it to expand a child's interest in the page, I think Dr. Seuss would have really liked it. We'll never know, of course, but, you know, it's really great when you see good story, good images combined with good interactive design.
Another app that you like for reading and language arts for older kids is called The World of Lexica. Can you talk about it? It's a game, right?
It is. It's important to know about because it's really, you know, over the years there have been all these computer-aided instruction attempts back in the days of the mainframe. This is a first modern attempt that uses tablets. And it takes all of the classics, you know, even novels like Moby Dick, Huck Finn is in there, with all of the issues that come along with these stories, and it puts it in a world that's sort of like Harry Potter. It's kind of like Hogwarts meets the classics.
Huh.
It's a gorgeous, immersive world that will appeal to a child who's you know, likes that sort of experience, but instead of discovering hidden gems, you discover hidden gems of literature, and that's really cool. And it also has record keeping so that it will sync with the school. This curriculum is available for both Apple devices as well as Android devices, and it's a subscription that a school would get for, I believe it's $12 a year, but you want to check the prices. But it's pretty exciting. I think it's worth talking about, and I think it's worth that we all know about it, just because we're starting to see the mainstream curriculum moving into the tablet.
Is this something that you'd bring up at a PTA meeting or something, or with your teacher or the principal?
Well, they should. If they don't know about it already, they certainly will. Increasingly, a curriculum, any curriculum, whether it's an elementary or middle school or college, is being influenced by technology. And whether it's an informal way, such as, you know, Green Eggs and Ham, which is a $3 or $4 app, or in a big way, which is, you know, a school district passing a budget to afford a subscription to this, it is making and it's starting to have more influence on what our children do. So we do need to know about it on some level.
You know, our conversation inevitably inspires questions, at least in people's minds, if not directly by phone or email, about the value of, or maybe the damage being done by having technology be but such a strong part of the curriculum. And Warren Buckleitner, I mean, your credentials, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and what your thoughts are about that?
Well, it's not an it's not a young question. It's been asked since the 80s, you know, when the Apple II came out, people were saying technology is destroying the schools or it's distracting. And in many ways, the criticisms were right. I was a classroom teacher, so that's really where that's my point of view, and I've kept it all these years. And you know, I'm inherently interested in how we can leverage the power of technology for helping every child. So when you say no child left behind, I'm really thinking about that. And that's why if you can give a smart kid a $170 Chromebook and, you know, everything that Google has to offer, that's just amazing. And so we need to start working on that. But it's not easy to run a school and, you know, have to put up with all of these vendors who come in saying we've got a, you know, a $10,000 or $100,000 solution that's technology-based. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. And, you know, it's exciting. And some the thing that we got to remember is some of it does work, and it's not always a bad thing. So research helps, and I think having conversations like this is important as well.
With the world of Lexica that you were talking about a little bit ago, you can't enter that world without the credentials. They're sold to a school district, and you're saying when you talk about that $12 subscription, that's for the family?
That's actually the school would pay that per student.
Okay.
So there's a contract involved with that. Now, this comes from Amplify, which is the Rupert Murdoch, Joel Klein company that came out with their own tablet. That tablet was an Android tablet, and their idea was, let's go into a school, give every kid one of these Android tablets, and it'll run all this curriculum. They've recently discontinued the tablet, and I think one of the reasons I like Lexica, this new reading curriculum, is that it's cross-platform. So it'll survive the different ups and downs of the hardware.
Another app that you wanted to talk about for some fun and maybe a little phys ed is the dancing app called Bounden.
Yeah, it's crazy. It comes out of Amsterdam that uses content from the Dutch National Ballet. And I just wrote a blog post for the New York Times Motherlode blog that is about how you get a group of kids who may not be best friends, such as when they're in the backseat of your minivan, how do you get them cooperating, and are there apps that can help? And I came across Bounden. And what you do is, and if you and I were standing in a room and one of us had this app on our iPhone, so it's only iOS, mm-hmm. We would actually both touch the screen, and it would walk us through using a sound, actual dance steps from the Dutch National Ballet. So you and I would be dancing like ballet dancers.
Yeah, right.
Now,
whatever.
Well, I did try this with both my daughter and my wife, and it worked. And I have to say, I'm not a very good dancer, but you know, it uses kind of the Guitar Hero visual clues.
Uh-huh.
So if you're on track, these little dots move into a target. So you can kind of, you have to watch the screen while you do this, which is tricky. But it has you doing twirls and all of this. And it starts easy and gets hard. So I'm always looking for things, apps that sort of push the technology. And I think that this is one that is like, wow, just when you thought you'd seen everything, this comes along.
Bounden, and what does that cost?
That's $3, and it runs on iPhone.
Okay. Well, Warren Buckleitner, as always, thank you so much. Appreciate your time today.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Ann.
It's Warren Buchleitner. He's editor of Children's Tech Review. We'll have a link to his blog post in the New York Times on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. More Tech Tuesday coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. If you're unsure whether you want a smartphone or a tablet, tech company Samsung feels your pain and apparently has a solution. Their latest big phone or small tablet, the Galaxy Note 5, is set to hit the market. Joining us now to discuss that and other tech news is contributing editor for AndroidCentral.com, Russell Holly. Welcome back, Russell.
Thanks for having me.
So just how big is the Galaxy Note 5 phone?
Well, it says that it's got a 5.7-inch screen, but it's actually smaller than the previous Galaxy Note phone. So they've done some trimming to make the pieces that go around the glass smaller than the previous version. And a lot of that has to do with using the same kind of design language that we saw with the Galaxy S6 and S6 Edge earlier this year, where it's that all glass with the metal trim around the edges.
Mm-hmm. What does that say to you that they kept the screen the same size though, right?
They kept the screen the same size, mm-hmm. and it's larger than most in that category, and that's what the Galaxy Note has always been. You know, one of the bigger phones that you can buy. You know, due in large part to its ability to run apps one on top of the other in kind of a multi-screen view and. Take notes directly on it through the pen that is embedded in the casing.
Right. I wondered if that's why they call it a note, because of that pen. It comes with a pen. You can use it on the screen. Has that been improved at all?
That has been improved dramatically. It's significantly more sensitive, and it comes with this really cool new mode that works even when the display is off, so that you take the pen out. You don't have to turn the phone on and go to a note-taking app or anything like that. You can just start drawing on the screen, and that information gets stored in this instead of white on black, it'll be black on white. So you'll just barely see the information that's there, and then you save it, and you don't ever have to go into like a separate app or unlock your phone or anything like that.
Where does it automatically save it?
It'll automatically save it to there's a notes folder on the phone where it'll save that information, and you'll access it once you unlock the phone and go back to it.
I kind of love that.
It's such a cool idea, the way that it's been done. It's really surprising, all the different kind of pen technologies that we've had over the years, including Microsoft with the Surface, that we haven't had that setup, done yet. And Samsung so far has done a very good job making it work.
How, as far as penmanship goes with those things, you said it's more sensitive. Do you still have to, is it better to print? Is it better to do cursive? How does that work?
So a big part of this, it works, with either one. They've worked really hard on, this is kind of a weird way of explaining it, but removing as many layers as possible between the glass and the display, mm-hmm. so that when you put the pen to the glass and start writing, it has the same basic feel as having a pen on a piece of paper. And it's never going to be exactly the same, because it's still plastic on glass instead of metal on paper. So it's never going to be, a one-to-one comparison, but they've worked really hard on making where the lines go, in coordination to where your hand is, as close to writing on a piece of paper as possible.
Does this mean that I could save my doodles?
It does, in fact, mean that you can save your doodles. As a matter of fact, the note line has been known for artists all over the world using the phone to draw really amazing sketches and things like that on the note in previous generations. So I expect that will definitely continue with this one.
Very interesting. It has a new fingerprint sensor too. It has had that in the past, right?
It has had that. And this new one is the same fingerprint sensor that we saw on the Galaxy S6 and Galaxy S6 Edge, which is fantastic. It works in very much the same way that the sensor on the iPhone works for grabbing fingerprints, except it's an oval-shaped button instead of a circular one.
Are you a fingerprint proponent or skeptic or what?
I love having fingerprints on there as a way of unlocking the phone. I recognize that it is not a 100% secure thing. Someone can get your fingerprint relatively easily and use that to unlock the phone, but it is significantly more secure than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the direction that I usually push people in when it comes to just simple things on your phone, like having passwords and stuff like that. Is that, you know, any small thing is better than nothing when it comes to you know, smartphone security. So I'm personally a big fan of it, and we're going to see more fingerprint authentication stuff happening in Android over the next year, including using it to complete purchases for apps in the Google Play Store. We've already seen some really cool integration with apps like PayPal for sending payments and stuff like that, where your fingerprint ends up being all you need. So it's definitely something that's going to continue both for the iPhone and for a handful of Android phones over the next year to gain in popularity, I think.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the latest technology right now, the Galaxy Note 5, with Russell Holley, contributing editor to AndroidCentral.com. If you have any sort of tech question, want to run it by Russell, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, besides the storage issue, it can also be hard to use a big phone like this with just one hand. I really can't use any phone with just one hand anyway, but so Samsung has included one-handed usability options. What in the world are those?
It's so silly. This has been in the last couple of versions of Samsung's operating system, and I've never fully understood it. There are some people who swear by it. I am just clearly not one of these people. It takes the entire operating system and the display and kind of shrinks it down a little bit so that you have a portion of the screen that you're not using, so that you can access everything with one hand while you're, you know, maybe walking down the street or something like that. And for me personally, that's, I mean, you're wasting, you know, a third of the screen because it's been shrunk down, and you know could just use two hands to get the job done, and you'd, you know, have a better display to work with. But there are some people out there who just really dig that mode where you just kind of double tap on the screen and everything kind of collapses down so that you can access it all with one hand. So more power to the people who love it, I guess.
And people who are, you know, one-handed, you know, definitely can come in handy for them. But
sure,
as long as I have two, I'm going to default to that. And I wanted to double check. The Galaxy Note 5 has a new mobile payment system. Is that what you were just talking about, Samsung Pay?
Samsung Pay is a little different from the mobile authentication thing that we were just talking about, but the fingerprint sensor does play a part in that.
Okay.
This is a little different from Apple Pay in that it works everywhere. It doesn't require a special terminal on behalf of the vendor or anything like that. If there is a credit card reader in sight, then Samsung Pay on the Galaxy S6, S6 Edge, Note, and Note Plus will work on these devices. And it's basically you have your credit card information stored on the phone. You access the card that you want to pay with. You tap it to the credit card reader, and the payment is complete as though you had just swiped your card. And then, like I said, what separates this from Apple Pay is that it works on every terminal instead of just the ones that are approved to work with Apple Pay.
See, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's something that it's going to come out in about a month or two where anyone can use it. There's going to be some limitations at first that Samsung hasn't quite made clear as far as what cards you're going to be able to use. But they're going to continue to improve it as more people use it. And I think if you already have a Galaxy S6 or S6 Edge, because it uses the same technology, then you will be able to participate in kind of an early access test of it towards the end of this month, but Samsung hasn't made the details clear on that just yet. So I assume that people who have requested information about Samsung Pay on their phone will get an email with details about that shortly.
Is this technology catching on? Are everyday people using it to pay for their groceries?
You know, it's so hard to say, and I think it's really regional right now. So like when I fly out to San Francisco to do stuff out there, I see a lot more people using it in those kind of areas than I do if I'm, you know, visiting my parents, you know, kind of in the country, you know, so it's hard to judge for me, but I think that it is slowly gaining in popularity. It's probably not as fast as Apple and Samsung would prefer, but I do think more people are using it.
Samsung is also releasing a second bigger phone. You've mentioned the Galaxy S6 Edge Plus. It's got a curved screen?
It does. This matches the Galaxy S6 Edge that came out earlier this year. It's basically the same size as the Galaxy Note, but instead of having the stylus, it has the display kind of melts off the sides.
Okay.
And includes some software features that appeal to people who are a fan of that phone earlier this year.
Like what?
So it has these kind of quick swipe animations for when you want to access, kind of favorites in your contact list or specific applications. Instead of opening up the individual application, you just drag your thumb in from the inside, and these bubbles will come in from the left or the right, depending on which hand you hold your phone in. Sorry, that information, will be there for you to access instead of having to go and open the phone app and look for that contact and make the call. It'll have all that information there. And when someone in that list, in that kind of favorites list that you have, calls you, there's this kind of pulsing animation that happens. The color that you have assigned them will flicker on the side of the phone, so you can actually have your phone laying down on your desk, and you'll see that color because the display is warped around instead of being flat. Hmm. You can actually see the edge of the display, and it gives you that little notification to let you know who's calling.
That's interesting, because I do keep my phone down like that. Hmm.
Yeah, it's an interesting way, especially if you have people that, if you have three or four people who, when they call you, you really want to know about it when it happens, but you don't want, your ringer on at work or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's a neat way of doing things.
Lastly, in Samsung news, and it is a big week for news in Samsung, they've introduced an accessory for those who miss a physical keyboard. It's like a throwback.
It is. I was a little surprised when they made this announcement.
Yeah.
It looked kind of hideous on stage, but then I saw other pictures of it in other colors, and I was a little less offended by its design. But it is a special case that clips onto all the phones that were made in this current generation, so Galaxy S6 on up until the ones that were just announced, and it gives you access to a physical keyboard. So people who really appreciated having like BlackBerry style keyboard will have access to that keyboard, and it's not a permanent thing. You can take that keyboard off and clip it onto the back of the case when you're not using it and still have access to the entire screen.
Why do you think they did this? Why? I mean, this is a big deal to do this.
I think that there are people, there's this small group of people, it is a very vocal group of people,
okay,
who just really want a keyboard to come back. They want that phone that had a physical keyboard because they don't exist anymore. We don't have phones that come out that are of the same quality as a Galaxy Note or an iPhone that have a keyboard attached to them anymore. Mm-hmm. And there have been, attempts to make this work that haven't been particularly successful in the past by third parties. And so Samsung, they went and made this case, and they adjusted the operating system so that when you put the keyboard on there, everything that is normally underneath of that comes up to the top, so that it's almost as though the keyboard is always there. You could choose to use your phone with this keyboard always attached if you wanted, and not miss anything.
Yeah, it's a small group of people asking for it, but as you said, a very vocal. They're responding, obviously, to something. Do you see anybody else out there maybe following suit?
It would really depend on the success of this. It's hard to say, how that kind of thing would happen, because it's just one of those things that it either works really well out of the box and people jump for it and they absolutely love it, or it doesn't work very well and people get really upset, because this case is, not inexpensive. It's an $80 case.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that if Samsung can pull it off and it works really well, I haven't tried it yet, but if it works well, then I think that we will probably see other companies follow suit. But if it doesn't end up working well, I think there are going to be a lot of people really upset at Samsung for having dropped almost $100 on this little keyboard.
We have an email from Marty who asks, would you happen to know anything about Verizon doing away with the 2-year plans?
Verizon has adjusted their plan setup. It's all available on their website now, where the agreement plan that they have set up is that you can purchase your phone outright, and there are plans that work with that are essentially, month-to-month arrangements that are different from like a prepaid phone setup. You have all of the same benefits that you would, the family share data and stuff like that. So it's very different in how it looks, but when you go to actually use it, like when you sign up for a family plan, your regular monthly statement is going to be just about the same as what you have right now. There's just not going to be that kind of forced 2-year situation attached to it, unless you decide to enter into an arrangement with them for, you know, subsidizing the cost of a phone or something like that.
Okay, yeah, okay, which is what a lot of people do anyways. But Russell Holly, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That's Russell Holly. He's contributing editor to AndroidCentral.com. Thanks to the All-Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Shyla Knott, All-Sides interns Shahina Sagiri, Ryan McFadden, video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is a composer of our theme music. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.